Well, hello, everybody. This is Kevin Miller, and this is the relaunch of the Free Agent Underground show. The point here is not specifically teaching self-employment and free agency. That's what we do at Free Agent Academy with our members. But here, just to highlight the free agents, the successful free agents who are out there, the people that you may not know about, but they're flourishing out here. We talk with them and work with them every day. It's not necessarily Free Agent Academy members. We'll be having people on here that are just out there in the world, people that we come in contact with that are just doing it successfully from the smaller levels of just making a decent income for themselves to people that have a nice small business. But we're just going to profile them and bring them to you so you can hear the real stories and be inspired and learn a lot just from that. Today, I'm going to talk with Chuck Bowen, and I'll introduce him in just a second. But I do want to do a quick call out. I know we've got a lot of people listening here who have been some of the folks. Actually, it's over 120 now who have submitted ideas to the blog post that I put out a couple days ago at freeagentacademy.com. I just want to thank you again and let you know that we will get back with you. I did not anticipate this many, and they keep coming in at the little Google form that we used and on Facebook fan page and everywhere. So we will get with you and excited to talk with you. Hope that some of you will be joining us at Free Agent Academy. We've got a freshman membership for those seeking their idea that we work with you. And then, of course, we've got some of you that are signing up for our March 12th through 14th Idea Discovery Camp event that's on the webpage that you can go check out. So eager to talk with you all and just help you make those ideas come to fruition. Well, today, Chuck Bowen is my co-host here at Free Agent Underground. A lot of you guys that know him have already seen him do some of the past shows that we did last year when we were playing around with video. And you may know him from people like Dave Ramsey and Dan Miller, and he gets a lot of exposure through those guys. But today, for our official relaunch here, at least, I wanted to make sure that you do know who he is, as he will be talking with you every week as we do these shows, but also because he just has a killer free agent story of his own, where he came from the corporate world. I wrote in the little update that I did out to everybody that he came from the three-piece suit corporate world to now the jogging suit Free Agent Academy world, since that's what he usually wears, even at our events up here. But Chuck,
you're not
is
digging
one
on
of
me, Kevin, are you?
I am. I'm gonna rail on it. But now I'm gonna blow sunshine up your butt, man. Chuck is the hands down the best business coach that I've ever encountered, and I've encountered a lot because he speaks layman's terms, but he's big on action. His best quote that I love is, "If we can make it happen on paper, we can make it happen in real life." He's my business coach personally. And everybody loves him at the events because he asks the right questions, he asks the hard questions, and they give him a little bit of crap because he makes people cry. The king of cries, yes, but in a good way. I mean, you pull out the good stuff. So hey, I want to go, Chuck, through your initial story. Chuck's calling in from San Antonio, Texas. That's his home base. I'm up here in Woodland Park, Colorado, just up the pass from Colorado Springs. So Chuck, I've got snow moving in over Pikes Peak right now. How about you?
No.
Yeah, I didn't figure.
we're actually a little cooler today. We're like lower 60s, so
ooh, hey.
I guess we're balmy.
Yeah, summertime weather for us.
Oh, no
well, man,
kidding.
I know your story, but I want to take you through for the folks who don't know it. How many years ago was it that you were full time, employed in the corporate world?
2002, so it's about 8 years ago.
2002. So you're doing that. I knew you were making good money. You're doing stuff that you knew it well. It was going in and helping businesses ramp up. But what was the pain or the desire that prompted you to say, nah, I'm not going to keep doing this?
There were lots of things going on, but I think the primary thing was, it's just I love change, but I was moving, relocating, traveling a lot. And that was a part of it, away from the family a lot, off and on. For about a five-year period, the last 5 or 6 years I was in corporate America, I traveled 5 days a week for about 2.5 years of that. doing, you know, new startups and then new companies we'd move, relocate, that sort of thing. So that was part of it, Kevin. And
yeah.
Then I think another part of it, yeah, was just the fact that looking back later, I really wanted to work at places where I felt that I could make a difference, but also where it was easier to make change. And what I found out in corporate America, at least the experience I had, was that it was just exceedingly difficult sometimes to get the ship turned around. And then there was a lot of, you know, political stuff going in behind the scenes, you know, at the level I was at. And it wasn't fulfilling anymore. I loved the type of work. I liked most of the people that I worked with. I loved the technical aspect of it, but I just felt like there was supposed to be so much more.
So you're doing that. You got. I mean, you didn't say this, but I'm sure the money wasn't. You didn't hate that either. That was decent. So
that was actually one of the reasons why it was hard to shift.
Well, and I think that's, as you know, it's relevant for most folks, even if they're, you know, at whatever level they are, it's still that security of the income. So, Lori, your wife, how did she initially respond?
You know, Lori is a person that, you know, we communicate very well. She always knows what's going on, that sort of thing. By style, she is a very conservative peacemaker. She doesn't like risk. She doesn't enjoy conflict and that sort of thing. And so, you know, when you go to your wife and you say, well, thinking about going off and doing my own thing, I'm not going to, you know, get back into the whole corporate gig, headhunter thing and all that. And so I think I'm going to try something on my own. I mean, she loved me enough to say, okay. And she knew that I'm a guy who is results focused. And she goes, okay, you know, I followed you around, been faithful this long, then I'll give you some runway to go do that. Now, with that said, Kevin, I knew that it wouldn't be, you know, limitless. I had to deliver, you know, the results. So what I did was, because I know that Lori values safety and security, consistency above all things, I knew that it was important for me that before I got the results, you know, to lay out a basic game plan that showed us stepping, you know, step by step from where we were to where we wanted to be, and then able to execute on that. I mean, heck, when you project that in your first year, you're going to take like a 92% pay cut, you know.
Yeah.
That one, you know, if you can't get through that one, you know, on a pretty you know, pretty timely basis, you're not going to survive it. So,
I just love that you said it. Yeah, she had she had faith in you, but you knew it would not be limitless.
You know, absolutely. You know, Kevin, on a lot of our calls, we get asked that question. So, how do I get my spouse to support what I'm doing?
Yeah.
You know, lots of things you can do: communications, bring them in, share the vision, and all that. But at the end of the day, it boils down to, I think you got to get results.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't have given me, you know, all the time in the world had we not been able to do that.
Yeah. I want to just, to everybody listening, at least the folks on the webcast, which we've got, gosh, a majority, I had said that there would be a chat option on there, and I just realized that I failed to turn the chat option on. So if you'll hit refresh, you'll see a little chat box there. And I do have that up. I just put in there myself. You got to put your name in there, or put a name in there. And it would be great if you would put your actual name in there. And then you can send in a chat question as well if you would like to, as well as you can just post the question in there. Okay, so you want to go do something different. How did you, out of the sea of opportunities out there, when you're looking at, okay, what can I do to be self-employed? What can I do to generate revenue on my own, in and of myself? How did you make that choice?
Wow. That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? What's your best idea?
Hey, that's the one we got 120-plus, and they keep coming in from my blog post the other day, and, of course, why people are signing up for our our event that you'll be co-hosting with me up here in a few weeks. Yeah, what is that idea? So, yeah, so you.
So how did I do that? Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. That's what we're going to talk to. I think that's the only thing you can really share with people is, you know, how did you do it? What worked for you? And what have you seen work for others? Kevin, what worked for me was the first thing I had to do. I mean, I left my work in the end of August, I think it was, of 2002. So I'm sitting there basically in September of 2002. Remember what happened in September of 2001, 9/11.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, what can I do? If I don't want to go back to the corporate thing, because I'm getting calls from headhunters and all that kind of good stuff, right? What can I do that's going to be unique, remarkable, that I can make money at, that's authentic to me, the whole nine yards? So I took about 3 months, I think, of really just really tough, hard contemplation. You know, I'm a cyclist. I never rode my bike so much as I did then. I mean, it's almost like every day I was out for a two-hour ride. You know, I was putting in a couple hundred miles a week on my bike, and I found out that was kind of a, you know, kind of a prescription for me.
Yeah,
so
therapy.
I just started. Yeah, it really was. So that's why when you guys hear me talk, I'm so high on exercise, because I think it is. So I spent a lot of time with myself. I spent time with God. I was reading Psalms, I remember a lot. And I think at that point God was teaching me to listen. So to me, one of the key phases you go through is really quiet contemplation, where you're just rigorously going through your mind, what are the things that I can do where I am strong and remarkable that I think intersects with what people would want to pay for. So I look back, and, you know, I'd done the whole corporate thing and all that, but, you know, to go out there and start marketing yourself as a consultant really wasn't that attractive to me.
Which, of course, would have been the low-hanging fruit. You know?
Oh, yeah.
If you had hired me at that time, that's what I would have been, you know, trying to push you towards. Oh, gosh, here's a low-hanging fruit, and especially
absolutely.
Looking at just financial viability.
You know, Kevin, I think I would have probably considered that more strongly. Except right before the last role that I had, I was a consultant for a boutique telecom consulting company. They had about 800 consultants on staff. So, you know, pretty good size, but smaller than Arthur Anderson kind of thing. And they placed, you know, high-tech telecom executives into consulting roles. So I had done like a six-month stint at Sprint, but... oh, my gosh, what's a telecom? Anyway, I spent about 6 months there. The push-to-talk guys, Sprint bought them. Anyway, so I spent about 6 months there, and my experience there really turned me off to that because, again, it was more travel, frustrating because you're trying to help them do things and their whole corporate hang-ups won't allow them to do it and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, in a nutshell, I look back, and the thing that came to mind was what was really strong with me is the fact that Lori and I had years ago really turned our lives around financially because we were a train wreck. And, you know, we turned it around. Near the tail end of it, we came across the Dave Ramsey stuff. We started out with Larry Burkett, so I became familiar with him. So just became really enamored with that. And said, what if I did, what if I tried out, experimented with some financial coaching? And that was in the days of, you know, you really didn't see any financial counselors or coaching. In fact, the Dave Ramsey Bunch had just started training people about a year before that.
Yeah, and I think that's important to point out. You say that now, and it sounds, gosh, you know, I think most people listen
normal.
To that, yeah, financial coach. Yeah, that's pretty normal. But, again, we're talking, was this still 2002? 2003?
It was 2002. I went through the training in November of 2002.
Yeah.
So I went there, and yeah, you're right. Everybody, I mean, Dave even called them financial counselors. Now he calls them financial coaches.
Right.
But they were counselors, and, you know, I had my whole vision of what counselors were, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And I came back and I said, wow, I don't really want to be a counselor. You know, I think that's a hang up for people. And so I was talking to somebody, and, you know, first of all, they said, I'm not sure you can really make a go of this, but if you do, whatever you do, don't call yourself a counselor.
Nice.
So we kind of dabbled back and forth and kind of came up with the word coach, so financial coach. And, you know, back in 2002, you didn't see any of those. So it actually turned out to be an advantage because it gave something of interest for people to ask you about when you said what you did.
Right.
Wow, what is that? Do you manage investments or whatever? And you got a chance to explain it. So so I did, and I started out just, you know, without any kind of, you know, big affair, you know, whatsoever, and just started doing some financial coaching. And my first client I got from my Sunday school class. You know, I taught on financial topics in my class, so they said, hey, we want you to help us.
Hey, can I butt in right there? That was one of my questions. I was going to drill down to how did you get that very first client. So obviously prior to that, you took this interest that you had, or this desire, this newfound desire, and started doing it for free, I assume, in your local church.
Yes. In fact, I found out the only thing that was hanging me back, because there wasn't really anything financially I needed to know more, you know, even thought I might. I came back from the Dave Ramsey training, and really what I got there was an understanding of how to counsel, how to coach, how to conduct a session is really what I learned. You know, they throw out some ideas on pricing and how to build the business, but really not too much. So I came back and said, well, now I know how to conduct a session for the most part. And we had a video of Russ Carroll doing it. And I remember coming back home, and I probably spent 6-8 hours going through that video, and I tore it apart, and I documented it down into a process, the steps, and how he did this and when he did it. And I just followed that game plan in my counseling, and then I realized in a few months that there were some better ways to do it, so I started moving it around so it flowed better, and I reduced the amount of time it took me and all that. But the main thing was, as soon as I came back, I went out and found someone to coach pro bono, I think beginning that next week or the week after. And then I started talking about it, and, you know, I was teaching Sunday school class, and I would do lessons on financial stewardship every once in a while, and people found out about it. And then I began teaching the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace course in the church for free, like you said. And I just started in a very basic way getting my message out there.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to and we've got people submitting questions, and they're on the chat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the focus of these Free Agent Underground shows is going to be interviewing free agents, just like we're doing here, not necessarily spending an hour on questions. But I will try to address some of the key questions that do come in. So please feel free to, and I do see them coming in. We've got a couple really good ones we'll have to come back and get to. But Chuck, so prior to that, I mean, one of my questions also was, how did you prepare for the transition? And you kind of already spoken that. Obviously, you said that, okay, here's an interest that I have, and you prepared by going to the source. Okay, so I'm interested in doing some financial, you know, consulting, coaching, or whatever you're thinking. And so you said, okay, who's leading in this area? I assume it's Dave Ramsey. And so, boom, you hopped a plane, jumped up there, and said, let's go see how they do it. You didn't, as opposed to doing what, as you and I know, people do, and going in, down into the dungeon, try to invent something themselves, invent the wheel themselves, and then come out to launch it. Instead, just go, ultimately, it's that big phrase, seek counsel. You went and sought example and counsel, an apprenticeship, in essence.
You know, I did. I don't know if I go so far as say apprenticeship, Kevin, because
an audit. How about an audit?
Yeah, I audited a class. I went for, you know, 3-4 days of a class, and it was very helpful. It was I referred so many people there because I think it's still the best formal training that you can get. You know, but then you're out on your own. I mean, very clearly the umbilical cord is cut after you leave, and now you're out on your own. And now you're out in the lab. I mean, you've got some beakers and some material, some, you know, chemicals to work with. You got to go out there and start experimenting with it. And that's what it was like for me when I first came back, was starting to experiment with how to build relationships, you know, for referral sources and that sort of thing, how to market myself. I remember my first website. There weren't really any places, many places. I think I did a network solutions website. It was one of the few places you could go to and actually, you know, buy your own website. I think it cost me like $5 a month or something. The templates were horrible. The technical support was non-existent. You know, my first website looked like a combination of Darth Vader and, you know, went to Disney World. I mean, it was black with all these colors. It was just horrible. But the thing was, I went out there and began to experiment with it. And when I did, I started learning things. And I couldn't really at that point find anybody to come alongside me to help me who'd gone before me, but I did use the resources that I did have at that point in time, like Russ Carroll at Dave's office. Yeah. And then Dave, actually those were in the day when, you know, I could reach out and touch Dave and talk with him. So, you know, we would, you know, do a thing, few things back
the,
and forth.
Pre-Rockstar days of Dave Ramsey.
Pre-Rockstar days, exactly. Right. And, so, you know, built a relationship then, and then, you know, your dad came into the picture about a year and a half later. I actually met him at the Dave Ramsey training when I was there. It was the first time I met him. It was right after 48 Days came out.
Right.
That summer, I think, is when it came out.
Well, for anyone listening, I had somebody ask this question, I think, on Twitter yesterday. They said, hey, are you by chance related to, you know, Dan Miller? I said, yeah, that would be my dad. So, yeah, Dan Miller, author of 48 Days, that is my dad. That's how I come to my entrepreneurship pretty naturally through him. But, yeah, so that is the next fruition of your business and saying, hey, obviously with finance, career fits right in there. And
mm-hmm.
So, again, you went to the source to check out how he did it.
That's right. Absolutely.
I remember that because you actually – you probably could have gotten him to share with you, but you just went and paid him for his personal consulting. That was your research investment.
Oh, your dad?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I paid him for Eagles Club, and it was very clear. I said, you know, I want to – even at that time, that was about after coaching for – probably I've been coaching for about a year and a half at that point in time, and I was considering adding – you know, career coaching, life coaching to the quiver, you know, so to speak. And I remember also I was still thinking about other things because I wasn't sure. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the whole thing of I'm going to be an entrepreneur, free agent, whatever, never look back, and I got it right the first time, it doesn't happen. Rarely, I think it happens. I still remember at the point talking to Dan about other options, and we kind of talked about this interim, you know, CEO kind of thing, come in, help companies get started, moving, that sort of thing. Still looking at other things other than just coaching because I was still trying to get traction, you know, from where I wanted to be because, you know, we were used to doing well financially and, you know, things were coming around and I was happy with it, very happy with it, and but I was still looking at other things. And Dan was very helpful with that. And then also I was really transparent. I said, and I want to know how you coach because I'm thinking about doing this. So I'm kind of learning the ropes from, you know, who I think is one of the best out there.
Well, hitting on this, and I know I use the word apprentice, and that is different. It's not like you came along and worked with these guys. So you audited that. But it still brings to light the aspect of going to the source. I've told this before, Chuck. It's probably been one of the classes we've done with our members. But I had somebody email me once and say, hey, you know, my husband's really interested. He's in a job, wants to do his own thing. He's interested in taxidermy. And so we're thinking about taking out a loan and sending them to school and kind of gave me this thing. I don't even know what the question was. I just know I responded with, so are you kidding me? To go pay to find the best taxidermist you can find in your local area and go offer to work for the guy. Instead of paying money to this tech school or whatever, you know, go find somebody who's not only doing it but doing the business of it and go learn from them. They'll probably pay you. If they don't, offer to do it for free. If that doesn't work, pay them. But go learn it from somebody who's actually hands-on doing it as opposed to these folks that are going to take a mortgage out of the house or whatever they were going to do to go pay for schooling, which obviously you could have done, Chuck, and not that we,
mm-hmm.
want to diss certification courses or coaching organizations. Mm-hmm. There are some really good ones out there, but it's interesting that you did not go to them. Do you even have a formal coaching certification of any type?
You know, the only thing, no. The only thing is in those days, Dave Ramsey would certified financial counselor. So I'm a certified financial counselor there. And, of course, approved coach through 48 days. That's all that I have as far as formal. And, in fact, in 8 years of coaching, I think I may have had somebody ask me that once, maybe.
That's great. We've had some people, even some Free Agent Academy members, who have recently, as they are pursuing their free agent ideas and what they can pursue, and they come upon an idea, we've had some of them who have said, I do need to make some income right now, and they've taken jobs even in the area that they want to pursue as free agents, which, again, I think is a viable, as much as we're anti-job, obviously the idea is to gain free agency, but if you can use a job in the area you want to pursue for free agency as an apprenticeship per se, I think that's a great opportunity, understanding that most people do need to make some income as well. Chuck, just to back up, as we mentioned seeking counsel, and I think you hit on this a little bit, but again, just in your own personal life, as you are, again, leaving the corporate world and you're looking at going to do your own thing, who did you seek counsel with, as opposed to just making this decision only by yourself? Now, I know you mentioned your wife, and we've got a really good question in regards to spouses that mm-hmm. That was posted. But who else did you, or did you seek counsel just from other people that know you, and what was the response?
I did. I talked in depth with my pastor, and he gave me a lot of good advice. In fact, I never forget that when I finally decided what I was going to go do, I went to him and talked to him about it. And I remember he prayed with me. We talked in his office. I'm the chairman of the stewardship committee in the church, so we know each other very well. And I remembered he took some oil. This is our Southern Baptist church. He took some oil that he had in his office there, and he anointed me and blessed me there. And I'll never forget that.
Wow.
Yeah. So I sought the counsel of my pastor. I sought the counsel of a few people that I was on an external board when I was here. This is on the tail end of the CEO job that I had here in San Antonio. So I was on a external board with some other, owners and CEOs in town. So I sought the advice of a few of them to bounce some things. Funny thing was, when I explained to them what I was going to go do, I don't know if I remember any of them encouraging it.
That's what I was interested in, because, we often, I think I said this in, maybe it was this idea blog that I posted and we got so much response to. I told people to, I had somewhere I wrote recently to seek counsel, but probably not from somebody who's intrinsically connected to them, like a spouse or those. Go seek it from, seek some input on your ideas from people who are successfully self-employed, because, we don't often get a ton of encouragement from those who know us, unfortunately. It's the truth.
Yeah, I think it has to be a balance. To me, when I go look for advice, Kevin, I look for the people who are likely going to encourage me and equip me and help me and that sort of thing. But I also look for the contrarians. I look for the ones who are going to challenge me and help me think about the things I have not thought about before, so that if in my mind I can come up with logical solutions to those things and also not be blindsided by something I didn't expect, I am so much stronger because of that. So, when you're in a group, it's easy when you're in a group of other coaches, let's say, and you're talking through these things, of course, you're going to get the encouragement and the counsel and that sort of thing. But you also want to seek out the contrarians, some people who will challenge your thinking or make you think more thoroughly or rigorously or logically about what you're doing.
Right. Gosh, that's killer. Well, Chuck, I don't want to leave anything out if you feel it's relevant here, but just, you've done it. You started that first, you got that first client And obviously you ramped up there. And I want to jump pretty quickly just to where you are today and the differences. But I do know, in knowing your story, that first year, so you got that first client, you got another client, and I know that you benefited from that association with Ramsey and getting some referrals there as well. But that first year, you did not make a dramatic income.
I did not. In fact, I think, if I remember clearly, we billed $28,000. You know, I was working full-time on this, made $28,000 in my first year on paper. But we had about a third of those people did not pay me for coaching.
Oh, wow.
Went through and did. Yeah, you learn very quickly, you know, about how to receive payment, that sort of thing. So I think I netted about $22,000 in the first full year. But just to tell you how it ramps up, you know, you also want to look at your run rate. Your run rate is currently what I'm doing this month. So I made $22,000, but I remember going into January of 2003, I think we were making about $3,000, $3,500 a month. So we went from $300, I think, in January up to $3,500. So we started ramping up pretty quickly. And then I clearly remember these benchmarks. In about June of 2003, we hit enough on an ongoing monthly basis to cover my personal and business expenses, which is about $6,500. So within 18 months, we were generating about, you know, $6,000, $6,500 a month. And then so in that second year, I think we did about $78,000 the second year. And then the third year, we continued improving, and we did right around $140,000 in the third year, and then moved on up, you know, from there.
Yeah, well, and I love that reality, and that's a big part of course, what we talk about here. It's not the hype of, you know, make $100,000 overnight with some opportunity. It's figuring out, what do you care about? What are you passionate enough to pursue and to give value to people with, and do what it takes. And that it's going to be a process. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey. But then the payoff, and I think it's interesting, Chuck, because, again, low-hanging fruit to begin with, we would all would have seen, gosh, you're so well-positioned to go into some kind of corporate consulting. You could probably do your own thing, no employees, and make a high six-figure income. Instead, you went with individual, initially, financial and career coaching, which is not the highest paying endeavor ever. And now today, so we fast forward today, and I'm not going to divulge all your stuff, but you're doing, you know, a lot of your coaching, you have other coaches that help with, and you've really flourished in business coaching, partnering with companies like Saddleback Leather Company, which they did, what, is that they do $4 million last year, or is that going to be this year?
We did about $4 million last year, yeah.
Okay, so you're having the opportunity to partner with companies like that, and your business, needless to say, is immensely flourishing, and I would grant to say that you are making more and, of course, enjoying it a heck of a lot more today, having chosen what you really cared about as opposed to choosing what we would have initially looked at as, oh, the best opportunity.
Yeah, Kevin, you're exactly right on. I learned a lot, and, you know, that's what's helped me so much in coaching. You know, when I work with someone, you know, I remember for a long time my mantra was stay your course. You know, plan a wise course that looks like it's going to deliver the results that you want, execute the plan, and stay your course. You know, later on, Seth Godin writes a book called The Dip. That's what he's talking about. You know, make sure you're not in a cul-de-sac, but also prepare for the dip. You got to get through there. And just from personal experience and working from other people, as you continue to, again, work in that lab that's called business, you keep experimenting with things. I mean, the simple rule of success to me is keep doing more things that get you good results and stop as quickly as you can the things you're doing that don't. And too bad we do the reverse. We ride the pony way too long, because we keep thinking it's going to work for us when it doesn't. And then the things we know we need to do, for some reason, we don't. It's either because of fear or perceived lack of resources, or whatever it is. So, yeah, my business has transformed. About that year and a half, 2 year point, I finally decided that I'm going to bring another coach on. So Tracy Micklitz, a wonderful coach. Hey, ladies, my daughter and her best friend just came in. That's a benefit of working at home, you know.
Yes, it is.
So anyway, Tracy came aboard, wonderful coach, and that was my first trial with bringing a coach on to help me with the workload. And that was a big reason why our income started increasing, was because I took the risk of, you know, paying Tracy what I would normally have made myself, and then, you know, freed myself up. And you know, I made some money off of her coaching for sure, because, you know, there was a little bit of a margin there and a gap. But what I did was that for that freed up time, I had a plan of what I was going to do with it. So I used that plan to then go, you know, meet with your dad and learn about career and life coaching, and then added that to the repertoire, and then ultimately brought on, you know, a few more coaches, and, you know, they came aboard, and that worked out really well, and I was able to make a step change because of that. And then a couple of years after that, decided that I was really missing helping people with their businesses. I had people ask me, so I started getting into business coaching, and that's one where I did kind of build it from scratch, because I saw business consultants, but not many coaches out there. So started doing business coaching, and then that's when ultimately I met Dave and Suzette Munson and became involved in Saddleback, and then that didn't happen overnight. That took, you know, over a year to transpire to where it, you know, we were beginning to work regularly together. And so the Saddleback thing came on, and, you know, and then from there, literally now I have weaned myself off of doing any personal financial coaching at all, except with a few entrepreneurial clients that I work with that want help in that area too. I have, you know, really reduced the number of career coaching clients. I'll only do a handful of those a year as well, and kind of pick and choose those. And even now I have begun to wean myself off of business clients, because, you know, life has changed and I've embraced it. Dave and I have you know, about a year and a half ago, launched our own production company where we make the Saddleback products, but now we have other clients we're making their products for, and we're starting to market and promote it. In fact, we call it True Blue Production Studios. It's in Mexico, and we are actually relocating next month to a space that's about four times the size of what we have now, because we've grown already, and we need that. We've, you know, have about 45, 50 employees now down there. And, you know, the funny thing is, Kevin, you know, looking back of where this thing goes, and I always think you need to go where you're strongest. Find out where you have infinite energy, you know, where your genie in the bottle is, and where your core talent is, because I really believe that you can't become remarkable and strong, really strong, so you stand out in an area if you don't have an innate talent there to build on. So if you just go with it, that I never would have looked back. In fact, we owned the business. I had a business for about a year, and I couldn't believe that I had my own employees. I mean, I'd always managed other people's employees.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it was very natural. But just the idea of having your own employees, I mean, it's different in you. So for me, knowing that a good coach, just like any other entrepreneur, should find ways to make passive income, you know, when they're not in front of someone.
Yeah.
I really never got into doing the whole e-product thing, you know. For some reason, it just didn't click that much for me, even though I've done a few. Yeah.
Sure, you're expected to, you know, write a book or create some audio product and transcribe that, have an ebook, and yeah, something that can sell, so you're not doing face to face. Yeah,
absolutely. And it just kept weighing on me. You know, every time I talked to Dan, or, you know, the mastermind group where you and I and Dan and a few others were up there, you know, three or 4 years ago, you know, it just came through loud and clear. You got to do something. And I felt stress over that. What I finally realized about 2 years ago was my version of that is to start up and own businesses.
Yeah.
And now that we've done True Blue, and I'm partnering with a few other people, Scott Stearman and I are partnering on some things, and another client of mine are partnering on some things, I just realized that that's what I do, and that's what I'm, you know, decent at. So I guess the message here is that everyone listening to this, you should look deep. It may not take the same form as it does for other people, but it's still there. And so you have to find what is how it uniquely fits you in your own style.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and you mentioned, Chuck, you finding what you're innately gifted at or what your innate talents are. And, of course, we know that, and I want to be sensitive to the fact that I know a lot of people don't know that. And mm-hmm. I understand that. And at the stake of pitching something, I will anyways. I mean, that is why we have this event coming up March 12th and 14th. I mean, it's to help people. What is your, you know, what is your makeup? We're going to go through personality profiles and what are you innately good at? And then what's your line? You said that earlier, and I've heard you say it a couple of times, even in some of our member classes, where your personality style or what you're passionate about, what you're good at, where they intersect. How did you say that?
Yeah. I, several years ago, developed what I call the four P's, and now there's five. It's your personal style, your proficiencies, your passions, and your purpose. And then the fifth P that I really believe in is principles. So you've got to look at where those things intersect, you know, what the market wants. So it's not enough for you just to focus internally and say, wow, then here's a product, here's a service, you guys ought to buy it, you know. And it's also not enough to go out there and look for an opportunity that everybody's doing because they're making money at it and then forget the fact that it should fit you authentically. So my way of kind of summing it up is that your business should reflect who you are, where you get the results, and the life that you want. It should just be a reflection of you.
Man, that's just great. And Chuck, I'm going to ask you one more question, and then I'm not sure how, just because we've been at 40 minutes now, and I really didn't.
Why don't we do that and quickly dive into the question? I think we can get
there
pretty fast.
I thought I'd do that. Yeah, let me ask you one more question, and then say, hey, you know, that's our free agent spotlight there, and if people want to beg off, then fine. But yeah, then we go ahead and see, answer some questions if you've got the time. The one question I wanted to ask was, and I know it would be easy to list a laundry list of things, but if you were to pick the highlights of what you appreciate most today, these many years later, as a successful, flourishing, free agent, your own boss, in comparison to, you know, early 2000s and beyond when you were an employee?
I appreciate, one, that I feel like I'm pleasing God more than I ever have in my entire life prior to that. Because it's almost like I finally opened the gift that he gave me, which is the absolute truth who I am, embraced it and said, wow, that person needs to do this and they don't need to do that. And that's how I crafted my business. So I feel like in my life, I always wondered, Kevin, before doing my own thing, that there was something more that I should be doing, I needed to be doing, and God wanted me to do. And I don't have that feeling anymore. I don't have that feeling, and that's special. Other things?
Well, I've heard from your daughter, Haley. I remember the last time I saw her, and she quipped that she wants to be a free agent. She wants to be self-employed when she grows up.
She does, and that's a good testimony. And that may be just she sees daddy, but, you know, we see some elements of that in there too. So I think that's the primary thing. And then other things are, of course, the freedom. And, you know, that doesn't mean just the fact that I don't work at all, because I work probably more and harder than I ever have been, but it doesn't feel like it. It's just it's easy. My work has never been easier. Gosh, I get to pick and choose who I work with. I mean, how many folks go into work every day and get to pick and choose who's on their team, you know, and who their boss is and that sort of thing? I love the flexibility. It's interesting in the summers now. we go ahead and plan our year out. We used to never plan vacation. I used to have vacation left over at work all the time, you know. And so now, I mean, the thing for the summers, we plan it because, you know, once Haley's swim team is over in June, I mean, we're gone and off places and all that kind of stuff, figuring out how to fit it in. And I factored in one time is that, you know, when I work a lot because people get emails from me at, you know, 1:30 in the morning kind of thing. But, you know, we counted up one time. I am off. In other words, I'm unavailable to clients probably about 12, 14 weeks out of the year. And I never had that flexibility before.
Yeah.
We've never been able to be as generous as we are now. It's never cost us less to live than it does now. You know, I get to work with some of the most phenomenal people out there, like you and Dave and John Dale and all the other people in FAA. Gosh, I could just go down the list and name all of them. And, you know, it's just, to me, Kevin, to sum it up, it's what God had designed life and work to be for us. That's what he's designed for us. And I feel like I get to experience and I get a glimpse of it, and, you know, I get to just live it. And it's something that once you get a taste of it, you want for other people to have the same thing, because that's what God meant for us.
Yeah.
Work was not supposed to be a four-letter word.
Man, so glad we decided to do this for our first show here, because you just laid out so much. And it's why we see people who become successfully self-employed, who become free agents, that become leaders, because they experience this fulfillment and they want others to have it. That doesn't matter. Yeah, again, if you're coaching people, or whether you're like Dave Munson, you're selling leather bags, or you're like Brett Trout, who's on one of our listeners here right now, who's starting a camping advocacy business. It's a gift, and you want to pass it on. You want to become an evangelist.
Yes.
Well, Chuck, man, thanks. I'm gonna end our official, you know, interview of you. And yeah, if you've got time, and we can go run through here, we've got a good amount of questions.
Let's do it.
A couple really, really good ones. Not that any of them aren't, but maybe I'll say a couple hard-hitting ones, questions. Mm-hmm. And real quick, I'm going to jump over, Chuck, to the it's actually on the couple questions on coaching, it looks like, that are on the bottom of the blog page that were posted there. Kristen, looks like Kristen, maybe a male spelling of that. I thought about becoming a coach, but I've run into an emotional obstacle. I have used coaches and counselors in the past, and I have never felt like I wasn't getting my money's worth. However, I feel like if I were to charge for a similar type of service, I would feel like maybe I'm not worth it. What advice can you give about whether I should go forward or not?
Kristen, that's very common hang-up I've heard and worked with a lot of coaches through. And here's the way I deal with it is I dealt with the same thing. Am I good enough, bright enough to justify what I'm charging you? And by the way, I always charge on value added, and not just, you know, what the competition's doing or a commodity or even hourly. It's value added. So, Kristen, the way I would respond to that is, first of all, understand the value of what you're offering to people. Charge a fair price, but also you can price it in such a way that it weeds out some people who are just, you know, window shoppers. It also sets yourself aside as being different from them, because you're charging more and people are going to want to know, you know, why does this cost more? You know, why is it more expensive? Why is Starbucks coffee more expensive than McDonald's coffee? That kind of thing. So the way you deal with it personally, I think, is that you give away a blow-me-away promise. And that's what I do. What I tell people very, very clearly up front is that I know that I may charge more than others. I know it's not cheap. But here's the promise that I give is that let's coach. Let's work alongside each other. And if I'm not worth it to you, or I can't help you in the way that I've shared that or led you to believe that I can, and you've done all your part and it's just not working, then you tell me what you think the coaching was worth. And that's what you pay.
Yeah.
So it frees me up to not have to worry about that I take advantage of someone, because one of my golden rules in life is that I am willing to pay well for something that adds value to me. And I don't feel like I should pay at all for something that doesn't, or is broken, or is misleading. So,
well, that's a perfect answer to that, Chuck. Now, you also said what I think would be helpful to Kristen, that you started doing this in your church, in a Sunday school class, and pro bono,
yes,
no charge. And I really like that. You're talking about coaching, or really any type of a service, is to, you know, go give it away and get your feet wet when there's not money on the line, and get some one, you can get some testimony. That's great. Testimonies, use them on your website, but also hone your craft a little bit. I think most people that we know that are successfully coaching, they were doing some of that before. Either they were offering it and not charging it, or they were doing it and they didn't even intend to be. I mean, my gosh, how many years did I spend every lunch that I would go to talking with people about their ideas and how to make them actually happen? I mean, that's just what I enjoy doing it. Well, obviously, the light bulb went off, and I thought, geez, you know, I could do this and make income from providing that value.
Sure, test it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Go out there and experiment with it. And the last thing I'd say, Kristen, too, is you can use it as part of your marketing. In other words, you've worked with coaches and counselors that you didn't feel like you were getting your money's worth. Then what you do is you say that. You said, I don't know about you, but I've worked with other coaches before and it didn't have a great experience. So here's how I separate myself. You will not have that experience with me. If you feel that with me, all you need to do is tell me. And then basically, I didn't cost you anything but your time.
Yeah.
And use that to market it and remove a hurdle. Yeah.
That is excellent. Be transparent. Perfect. Dallin Christensen. And Dallin's one of our members in Free Agent Academy. Thanks for posting.
Hey, Dallin.
Says, Chuck and Kevin, what's the best, or what is the biggest mental hurdle to overcome when transitioning from a corporate environment with bureaucracy to a self-employment or self-employed model? What can those of us escaping from the corporate cubicle do to anticipate those hurdles? Well, hey, that question is all yours, Chuck.
You know, one of the things that I deal with, Dallin, is just the lack of feedback anymore. You know, and the lack of, you know, I just did something and I got a result. Self-employment, especially when you first start out, it can be very, very much of a vacuum, you know, if you're not careful. If you don't surround yourself by other people, and Kevin and I, you know, we talked about getting advice and counsel and that sort of thing. One of the biggest mental hurdles, again, I hear from people is the aloneness. You know, you feel like you're out there by yourself. So you've got to ensure that that doesn't happen. And I don't mean you need to be, you know, working in some, you know, public place where you've got everybody coming in and out and they're in the cube next to you and that sort of thing, trying to recreate a work environment just so you can be physically around people. I'm talking about around people when you're bouncing ideas and that sort of thing. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and that really ties. We have a question right above Dallin's on the page that was just submitted by Stephanie. I feel skillful at what I do, but I don't have business financial skills. Do I hire someone? Does this mean I have to have a partner? Now, we can answer that separately, but it somewhat fits into what you said. And now, folks, again, I'm going to have to be – this is something – this show here, it's hard for me to do it and not talk about – a lot of these questions pertain to why we developed Free Agent Academy, and that is to come into – it's a members community and to have that ability to bounce stuff off and not go it alone. That's – I'm pretty known for saying the problem with self-employment is self, is that we go it alone. We want to own our work, not – try to do it ourselves. And so that speaks to what you were – obviously, that's why Dallin has joined us. He's a real new member with us. But, you know, to Stephanie, too, I feel skillful at what I do, but I don't have business financial skills. Do I hire someone? Does this mean I have to have a partner? Of course, I'm not having a partner. I would say, no, it surely doesn't mean you have to have a partner. Do you hire someone? Well, Chuck, you obviously have done a lot of work in that arena with people, with business people in the past.
Yeah, I think that, you know, combining these two questions together, one of the things you have in the workplace is the fact that typically on staff you have experts in different areas. people with expertise in people. They call them human resources. People who have expertise in financial and money and that sort of thing, accounting. People who are experts in sales, marketing, that sort of thing. So you're surrounded by experts usually in most companies. Now, when you're out there doing it by yourself, you're not. So what that means is that those functions don't go away. What it means is that initially, because of maybe budget constraints, you're doing them. So initially, if you've got the funds, it's worthwhile to then, I think, prioritize, and that's what I do with my clients, is what is your greatest needs and where am I going to put my resources toward that? And if one of those is that I need to make sure that I have information necessary to see how I'm doing, you know, let's call that bookkeeping or counting. If I'm not going to do it, it doesn't remove the fact that it needs to be done, because you don't want to, you know, fly a plane, you know, if you don't know how to fly without instruments, you know, into a fog bank without instruments. You know, you just don't want to do that. So, no, it doesn't mean that you have to have a, you know, partner in the traditional sense of a partner, but you do need to have somebody to come alongside you, and if that's what you call a partner, it's great, to help you in those areas where you have blind spots or you avoid that are critical, you know, to your business. One of the things you need to do, you know, Stephanie, is to ensure you know where you are best at and where you naturally plug yourself into your business. In other words, slam dunk, I can do this part of it. And then what I do is I recommend that you just create a little, even if it's on the back of a napkin, a little basic organizational, you know, functional organizational chart that says, here's the functions I need in my business. You know, operations, sales, marketing, you know, bookkeeping, you know, whatever those areas are, and then begin to fill out, you know, what needs to be done in those areas and then who's going to do it. And if you see that it says Stephanie and Stephanie and Stephanie and more Stephanie, and you start thinking about it and you realize that's not your cup of tea and you're likely going to avoid it and do other things, that's, you know, that's a big indicator that you need some help in that area. So if it's not business financial, sure. You know, read a book, hire someone, go to a class, you know, whatever you need to do, but you will need those, skills.
Yeah, for sure. You're talking up my alley, Stephanie. I'm a wreck when it comes to financial stuff. Now, Chuck has helped a lot with that, of course, but I mean, we have a CPA. I mean, they can do a lot for you as far as keeping your taxes and things like that. It kind of depends, too, on what scope and scale of business you're looking at. But, my gosh, yeah, get help in the areas that you're weak. Well, Archie Winningham, gosh, what an incredible guy. He's one of the best encouragers I've ever seen. I talk with him on Facebook, and he comments on most of the blogs. So thank you, Archie. And he says, I have a question. When coaching folks, what are the most unique differences that make us stand out from a regular government-operated career center that claims to do what private career coaches do, but without the fee? That's it. I'll boil it down to that. That's it. So how do we differentiate ourselves from the Small Business Association or the Government Career Center who has free coaching in there, when I think he also posted something in the chat, just struggling. He leads at Financial Peace University at his church, doesn't have any problem with that, enjoys that. But when it comes to charging, sounds like that's where Archie's hitting a roadblock.
You know, Kevin, one of the last things he says here is, I'm certain I will get this question many times. Archie, you know, what I would say is our assumptions aren't always reality. A lot of this question, even coming up, depends a lot on who it is you're targeting to help. If you end up targeting to help people who basically have no money or appreciation for help, then you are going to be competing with, you know, the workforce commissions and other things. And I think I kind of smiled here. He said the unique difference is that makes me stand out from the regular government. And as soon as I heard that, I went, let's face it. You know, what are you going to get from a free government career center? I think the best way to combat that, if you get that question, is I would ask that person, so have you or are you thinking about, you know, going through, you know, the local government-run career center? If the answer was yes, I'd say, well, help me understand your experience there. And I'd also ask, and so why are you looking elsewhere? Could it be that you didn't get your needs met there? What you have to be prepared to do is to answer those kind of questions, you know, geared on what separates you from everyone else. And what I would tell them, Archie, is that if you want to go through, you know, a very budget-friendly, you know, IT free experience, then I would suggest by all means you go through that. And then I would like for you to come back to me after you go through it and tell me what your experience was. How much farther did you get down the road? And then what I would do is I said, and if you're interested, let me share with you what my process is. And go through that with them in depth. And really spend time listening to what their needs are. And say, we're going to custom, you know, create a solution for you that helps you transition or transform from the work and the career that you have right now to work that authentically fits you. And I will probably tell you, because of how intense that is and how eye-opening it is and powerful that is, that you are likely not going to get that in a free experience. But if that's what you want, you know, try it out. Come back and chat with me.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is it doesn't come up. My goodness, Chuck, what you and I do, there are plenty of agencies out there that say that they do it for free, and, of course, that question doesn't come up. And there's one aspect of you get what you pay for, of course, but the other one is just having trust. We've talked so much recently about this book written by Seth Brogan called Trust Agents, and it's about having trust. When you have people's trust, when you're out there speaking and giving of what you have to offer and you get people's trust, then it's, you don't get compared like that. And that's why you see coaches that, you know, charge $50 an hour, and you see some that charge $500 an hour. And when they have testimonies to their abilities and to the results that they've gotten, then it puts you in a different bracket, and it really lends itself to what Kristen asked as well that we talked about earlier. I mean, that's really where branding and positioning and social proof comes into play, and those are just the building blocks of your business that you have to address.
But Kevin, you hit, that is the question that it begs, is that if Archie or others, if you're getting that question routinely, you have to go back and you have to question the message that you're communicating out into the community. If the message is that I should be compared with the free solutions out there, then you need to go back and relook at your message and your branding, because you're sending the wrong message.
Yeah. Yep. And we spend a lot of time working with people on that. It's a big kahuna in a lot of ways. What sets me apart? But we've got to figure out what value you can give and then hone that. Well, Chuck, this is a I'm not there yet. Richard in Cincinnati says, how do you market your business for growth? Now, he's talking to you specifically, I think, about where you started out. How do you market your business for growth beyond just being a Dave Ramsey counselor? So if we go back to your early financial coaching days and you were a certified Dave Ramsey financial counselor, he asked, how do you market your business for growth beyond just that?
Wow, super question, because if you just depend on the Dave Ramsey, you know, stamp of approval, it's not going to be enough. It used to help a lot more, Richard, 8 years ago, because you didn't see many. But now when you go into any good-sized town and you're going to find 3, 4, 5, you know, Dave Ramsey certified counselors, it's more difficult. So what you do is you boil it down to this. You understand that people coach with you not because you're certified by Dave Ramsey, but because of who you are. That is why they want you to come alongside them, because they believe you are the answer to their need. So the way you market it is you market it in terms of the results that you get for people, and you put it in such a way that it's most compelling, and it connects to people's needs. In fact, one good way to see it is go to my website, and on the front there you see the leading questions that I have that kind of generate the pain. You got to touch people's pain when you're coaching, or else they won't engage with you. And then some testimonials that speak to that. So what I do is I never really marketed myself ever as a Dave Ramsey counselor. In fact, if you were to go back and look at the initial versions of my website, you didn't even find Dave Ramsey on there at all, because I knew that when I came out of training is that if I did that, I was already going down to a dead-end path. That was all that I would be. And that is one of the primary problems, Richard, that I see with the Dave Ramsey counselors that are certified, is that you go to their website and it looks just like a Dave Ramsey website. It speaks about Dave. It doesn't speak about Richard. So the way you do it is that you market, when you're coaching, you're actually marketing yourself and the results that you can help other people get. And then the way you go about spreading the word out there is that you teach, you speak, you write, you use social media, and really trumpet your message out there. And do the best you can, Richard, in making it sound as remarkable and unique as possible as compared with the other financial counselors and coaches you're going to run across. If you say the same thing in the same way they say it, you will not stick out. You have to put your own personal, authentic slant on it, and then you have to market powerfully, and you have to do it consistently so that people know that you're someone to listen to, and it takes a while to do that. It takes a while to do that. That's some of the tools you can use are, you know, do a podcast, you know, have a YouTube channel for videos. I mean, I did a terrestrial radio, AM radio show for, you know, over 5 years. There's so many ways you can do it. What you have to begin with is grasping the fact that you have to do it.
Man, that's good counsel. We're going long on this. It's hard not to, because they're such good questions. We'll have to decide how we're going to do these shows from here on.
yes.
Yeah.
Well, can get here, some real quick. Yeah.
Okay, I know, but here's another great question. This is from Rhonda here in Colorado Springs. Great to have you on here. Local Rhonda, she asked, and she's going back, I think, to where I talked about you and Lori, you know, dealing with your spouse when you decided to be a free agent. She says, how can that trust be restored when you launched out without a solid plan, stupid, and crashed? Mm-hmm. Wow, Rhonda, hey, you're speaking my story right there. That's where I come to leading people in self-employment. I'm the guy that took the huge, ridiculous risks. You know, I was going to make $1 million tomorrow, so we just financed it on credit cards and crashed, burned, and meanwhile, I'm promising my wife we're going to hit the stars. Oh my gosh, there's my story. As a matter of fact, my wife Terry and I did a video podcast. It's here. If you go to freeagentacademy.com and there's some categories for the blogs, if you scroll down, there's one titled Marriage. And if you click on that, it might be the top one that comes up. And a lot of people have looked at that and gone back to that. We'll probably highlight that again or do it again. But I was the chiefest of sinners when it comes to that question. And it took a long time. It took a long time for that trust to be restored. If she were to say what actually did it, you know, one, it goes to what you said, Chuck. Obviously, you know, you show results. We used to joke. I owned the movie Jerry Maguire. You know, show me the money. That helps a lot. It really does. But she really gets the most security from me seeking counsel and being accountable. And I'll be totally honest, I do that with Chuck. Chuck sometimes talks with my wife. They do it behind my back to help get me in line. But for real, you know. And I know that you've got a tight relationship with Dave Munson and his wife Suzette, mm-hmm. as accountability and mediator, whatever, in that. But it did take a lot, and that's where, you know, Chuck is. I love his perspective of when you go in and create a plan, it provides security and viability all around. But to your question, Ron, how can that trust be restored? I mean, I don't know your specific experience, but I assume it's with your, you know, maybe your husband that crashed and burned with something. He needs to change. We don't like to hear that as guys, but if that's the case, he needs to change and he needs to seek counsel. He needs to get a plan together and have some accountability which as free agents, that seems like counterintuitive. Hey, we want to be our own boss so we don't have to answer to somebody. True, again, we want to own our work. But, buddy, we need to be getting some counsel and having some accountability because none of us are an island unto ourselves. It's just not going to happen.
I think as you're talking here, Kevin, two things came to mind. And one was, first of all, you admit that you did something stupid.
Yeah.
And I have found out every time I've done that with my wife or vice versa, it just immediately kind of put things on even ground again. That was really dumb. And I won't do it again. And then the second thing is, and so you can talk about it. And then the second thing is, wow, here's a novel idea. Go out and develop a solid plan. I can't imagine if you came back after that scenario and had a solid plan in hand and said, you know what, I really messed it the first time. But you know what, I've really worked on it, and here it is. I want to be part of it. I want it to be completely transparent with you on it, and I want your help, and we work alongside it. And here's the plan, and I'm going to go execute on it, and then I'm going to check back with you to see how I'm doing on it. I can't imagine that not being okay.
Yeah.
So well, you just acknowledge it, and you do it.
Yeah. And if you want to share more on that, Ron, gosh, please do. You can email me or post it somewhere, whatever, because that's a biggie that I don't know if we have anybody in Free Agent Academy or around that has the scars to show that I have from really hurting my marriage with my free agent endeavors. And I've come full circle to where now she is my number one absolute supporter and encourager, and is just thrilled. So I've got two questions here, and maybe I know we've got three, but two are from the same person, Stephanie. I don't know if it's the same Stephanie, though. This is in the chat thing. She's in San Antonio, Chuck, just so you know. Mm-hmm. She said, would an apprenticeship be helpful even if you have extensive background in the field you want to pursue? Would it be best to follow around a business pro to gain business admin skills?
You know, my thought is that I try not to do anything without a purpose. So if you have extensive background in the field already, then you need to ask yourself, what would I gain by doing an apprenticeship? If it's understanding how a business operates, then that would be beneficial if you don't have that skill already. So, Stephanie, the way I answer the question, the only time I do something is if it fulfills a need that I have a gap in. And it surely won't hurt. But make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, and you know what those reasons are, and you know the results that you expect to get.
She has a follow-up question, too. It says, do you have to have a business plan before you get started?
I smiled at that, and I said, no. It happens every day.
Yeah, I didn't, and I crashed and burned.
It happens every day. Matter of fact, if you want to – so the question is, do you have to have a business plan before you get started? No. Should you have a business plan before you get started? Yes. Will you separate yourself from the vast majority of other self-employed people? Yes. Will you likely have much higher success? Yes. Will you likely still be in business 2 years from now? Yes. Will you likely make more money? Yes. Will you likely avoid more problems? Yes. Will you likely have more hope and encouragement? Yes.
I think you've answered this question before, Chuck. That sounds pretty similar there. Yes. Well, so then the follow-up to that question then is define a business plan, because if you're like me and if you're old enough and been involved in business stuff, you see a business plan as this 300-page behemoth of crap. So define a business plan for Chuck.
The 300-page behemoth of crap. That is the best description. Yeah, absolutely. That sits on a shelf and gathers dust. I'll add that to it. To me, the initial business plan has to start out, and this is what, our simple strategic plan does with, what is your mission? What do you want to get paid for? What is your vision of where it could be a few years from now? What are the things you value that are going to be reflected in your business? What are the objectives you have in your business? Those are the most important questions initially to ask. What are the must-do and should-do things I need to do to make these basic objectives happen? And then what are the goals and action steps to make those things happen? to me, your initial business plan can be on, you know, three sheets of paper initially to get started with boldness and confidence. And then I would complement that with some type of, you know, budget or forecast for your finances so you can see on paper, because a lot of our decisions end up coming down to money or lack of it. So we can see realistically what all this work translates into and if it's realistic. So to me, that's what a business plan is, something that gives me the boldness and confidence to know that if I step out my door this morning and go do the things that I'm planning to go do today, will it get me to a better, more profitable place by the end of the day?
Now, if you were to – I mean, a lot of people think about this in terms of just quantifying that business plan. Chuck, and you are well more versed in seeing those than I am, but I'm prone to say, you know, there's plenty of great, valid business plans that do a really good job of outlining what you're doing and helping you out that are what, a few pages?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, when I see them, I usually get, when people first come into me and they say, well, I've got a draft business plan, I can send it to you if you want, I say, great. And it's typically 25, 30 pages. And I'll hold it and I'll read through it, and they're not bad. They're great. They're all classic. And so they come to me and I say, okay, this is great. I think you're in the right. So why is it you still feel you need help? And that is where you dig in and you find out there's something missing. I'm not confident with it. Well, why not? What's missing? Well, this. It looks good on paper, but you're having difficulty getting behind it because there's some key missing things that, you know, inhibit you from acting. And to me, that's what most business plans are. They look great on paper. I saw many of them when I worked in high tech on the West Coast, many, many of them. I laughed at them later because of the very detailed, you know, 5-year projections. And I go, you know what? That really isn't the question. The question is how am I going to get through my next 90 days? How am I going to get through my first 12 months? And it's almost like most business plans totally overlook that.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. Yes, have a business plan, but not the 300-pound or 300-page behemoth, the 3-page streamlined plan.
Powerful. Yeah. The
freedom
plan.
One more question. One more question, Chuck. And this is from Brent Green, who's a brand new member last week, I think, actually, brand new member with us. And he simply asks, is there anything you miss? This is a good one to end on. Is there anything you miss about the corporate world?
I miss some of my friends. I think I miss that, and I miss some of the challenges. I mean, I worked in very interesting fields. I mean, I worked for Procter & Gamble for 10 years, and then I did a few years at an insurance company, and then my most fond memories were the ones I did in high tech. And I just miss some of the people that I interacted there with on a day-to-day basis. But you know what? Other than that, I really don't. I really don't. I don't miss the politics. I don't miss the policies. I don't miss not being able to do what I really need to do right now to solve this problem. I don't like how difficult it was. Even as the COO and the CEO, I don't like the fact and Kevin, this made me think, you know, you asked me that question, what were the primary reasons I left and decided not to get back into it?
Yeah.
Was I don't miss the fact that I began to feel like, and all my colleagues felt the same way, that we were only as good as this month's results. Every month you're starting over again. And I never felt like I could build on something. It was never good enough. And I don't think that's the way work is supposed to be. I found that in self-employment, you get direct feedback very quickly on how well you did. And if you want to turn the ship, it's not like you spin the wheel 50 times and the thing starts moving. when you're self-employed, if you don't like the direction you're going in or who you're working with or the kind of work that you do or who you do it with or what you have to do this day or any of those things, you can change that literally on a dime.
Well, there you go. That's a great place.
So not much, I guess, is the answer.
That's a great answer. That's a great answer. Well, Chuck, man, yeah, you and I are dangerous when we try to limit calls. We talk a lot, but it's just great content. So there you go. There's our first from the relaunch, but our first official podcast for Free Agent Underground that's going to go an hour 20. Probably have to refine down from there. We'll be back here next week again, and I already have our – I haven't even told you, we've got our guy lined up. I'll outline him, but Quentin McCall. Guy's got about 4,000 friends on Facebook, and he has 3 self-employed businesses, and he's working on another one. So neat guy. He's done a lot. We'll be talking with him, and we'll probably maybe segment a time to say we'll interview him this long, and then we will do Q&A and try to contain it there. But, man, great stuff. Chuck, thanks as always. Thanks for sharing about you personally. Now everybody knows Chuck, and we'll go forward here with you and I co-hosting these things and highlight other folks, just bring to light the ability, the viability, and opportunity of free agency. All right, man. Have a great rest of the day doing whatever the heck you want to do.
Hey, and I'll tell your dad you said hello next week while we're on the cruise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Have fun on the cruise. Have fun on the cruise. All right, man. Take care, and thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Kevin.